A person having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 10-5419. Harry Hamilton appellant versus Timothy F. Baker, Secretary of the United States Treasury. Mr. Branch for appellant, Mr. Simon for appellate.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. There are three issues in this appeal. The first issue is whether the district court erred in dismissing the appellant's claim for discrimination based on the detail given to a Caucasian female. The second issue is whether the district court erred in granting summary judgment on a non-selection claim when the position was permanently given to the Caucasian female. And the third issue is whether the district court erred in granting summary judgment on the appellant's retaliation claim. The district court concluded that the initial claim for the denial of the detail should be dismissed because the appellant did not exhaust his administrative remedies. The evidence in the record is that Mr. Hamilton met with an EEO counselor, and he listed specifically three items that he was raising as an EEO complaint. One of those items was the fact that a Caucasian female had been detailed to the position in question, and she remained in that position for approximately 1 year before the position became available for permanent competition. The district court determined that because Mr. Hamilton did not raise this issue in a formal complaint, that the he had not exhausted his administrative remedies for this particular issue. It's the appellant's position that the district court's decision is an error because the agency was clearly placed on notice that Mr. Hamilton was pursuing a claim for failure to be considered for this detail, and the fact that this Caucasian female was given this detail.
The EEO complaint doesn't mention the detail, and it only mentions the safety management selection, and then the EEO sent a letter to confirm that this was a discrimination case based on the selection. Doesn't mention the detail and said, if you don't agree, please let us know.
Yes.
So, isn't the district court right?
Your Honor, we don't believe the district court is right because, first, the appellant was not represented by counsel, and this was at the administrative level. The process is designed so that people who work for federal agencies.
It was pretty careful here. It actually articulated what it thought the claim was and asked him whether that was right, and he never responded.
That is correct, Your Honor. He did not respond, but the agency had an obligation. If they were not going to consider one of his claims, they had an obligation to notify him that you file these three issues. We're only considering issue number one. The other two are dismissed. Mr. Hamilton,
did you start with this because you thought it was your strongest argument of your three?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Did you begin with this because you thought this was your strongest?
No, Your Honor. I'm not sure how to interpret that.
What do you think is your strongest argument?
Yeah, Your Honor, I think all three claims are strong. Non-selection, there's major issues with what the district court did with the non-selection for the permanent position. And I think that the third argument on the retaliation is not even a close call. The district court dismissed the retaliation claim because the court concluded it was too long in time since the time of when he filed his EEO complaint or initiated EEO protected activity and when the adverse action was taken. And I'll just address that briefly. The appellant's position is that he initiated informal counseling for the retaliation claim. This is the detail that went to Caraway, the other Caucasian female, after the permanent position went to Burrell earlier. But he initiated EEO counseling in August 2003. He filed a formal complaint in October 2003. And Mr. Hamilton made inquiry to Mr. Burns, the selecting official, in December 2003. The agency announced they were going to have this position. Mr. Hamilton inquired about the position. He didn't get a response from Mr. Burns. And in January 2004, the position was non-competitively awarded to Caraway. The district court concluded that there's a three-month rule that the adverse action must follow the protected activity for there to be the causal connection. Here, first, it's our position that the October formal filing of the EO complaint falls within the three-month period of the adverse action, whether you consider the adverse action what happened in December when there was no response to his inquiry or the selection in January. So based on that reason, the district court's decision here just seems to be erroneous. Either there's a misunderstanding of what the protected activity was, even though it's clear that either the informal complaint or the actual filing of a formal complaint would be considered protected activity. So we believe that there's a causal connection between his filing of the complaint and the action that was taken against him. The second issue is the non-selection, and there are major problems here. My understanding is that the agency does not dispute that Mr. Hamilton established a prima facie case for the non-selection. So under the ACCA decision, the other factors would be any evidence to rebut the agency's legitimate non-discriminatory reason, and then any other evidence of discrimination. There are all types of irregularities with this non-selection. First, it begins.
Could you focus on the comparative qualifications? What's your best argument that he was significantly more qualified?
Your Honor, just looking at their qualifications, we're talking about a.
I can do that. I was asking you, what's your best argument for her being significantly more qualified?
That Mr. Hamilton had a master's degree or has a master's degree, bachelor's degree. This was his career. He was professionally trained as a industrial hygienist and worked in it for 10 years. Leadership training, all of this training prepared him for this position. This is a position that's going to be interacting with the highest levels of the agency, writing policy, and compared to the person who was selected for the position who had a high school diploma and had not worked as a safety manager. The only really significant and relevant experience as a safety manager she received was the detail that she received for the year that preceded her selection for this position. Her prior work as a safety manager was in 1992 or 1993, so 8 to 9 years before this selection. She spent 10 years working in logistics, doing space planning.
What was the job, the year that she spent, to which you just referred, and I think it was renewed for a few months, was that in the very same job?
Yes, Your Honor.
Which the appointment was made?
Yes, it was.
So I don't understand why one would worry about academic credentials or something else in the past experience when the person's been doing the job with some success.
Well, Your Honor, that takes us to a prior issue, and that is our position is that the detail into that position was a illegal detail. It was only to last 120 days.
It was only 12 months in the job, or if you're wrong about the illegality of the detail, she's done the job
but
with some success. So why do we probe around to make comparisons of where they went to school?
Well, Your Honor, I think that there's a question of whether she had done the job or whether she had done the job with some success is a question, because she was questioned at her deposition. She was not able to articulate how she performed any of the major duties of the position.
What was her job rating, performance rating, I mean?
Your Honor, I believe it was I don't have a specific recollection, but I don't have any reason to question.
Is it in the record?
I don't believe it's in the record. I don't believe it's in the record, Your Honor. Another issue with the district court's decision, the district court decided that the detail issue was not exhausted. And as a result, the district court did not even consider the detail, the fact that she had been illegally or improperly detailed in this position in the non-selection aspect of his decision. In other words, he didn't consider that in a factor. Setting aside whether he exhausted his administrative remedies for the detail, the district court was still obligated to consider whether she received an improper or illegal detail which led to her selection in this for this particular position. The district court didn't address it at all. And we went through all of the irregularities, her qualifications, the fact that her application was not complete or she had to add her performance appraisal later, the fact that the guidelines required subject matter experts on the panel. We didn't have subject matter experts on the panel, and at least one person on the panel didn't even know the position that was the panel was interviewing for. The fact that there was no human resources person sitting on the panel as required by agency guidelines. The panel didn't score or rank the applicants. All of these were factors that normally would be presented or should be presented to a jury to allow a jury to weigh in on whether this tainted the process to such an extent that it may raise an inference of discrimination. I believe under the Salazar v. Romano decision, the court has said that an agency is required to provide a fairly administered selection process, and that simply was not done here. We even have, from the interviews, we don't have notes from the panel's review of Mr. Hamilton, and we have inconsistencies based on the statements provided by the panel members. One or two panel members said that they believe Mr. Hamilton didn't answer all the questions. And then that was contradicted, and it's not supported by anything else in the record that he did not answer the questions. And we don't have the notes from his interview. Later, some of the panel members said he did answer all the questions. One panel member said he was qualified to step into the position by default, but he was, and it goes to this next detail, he was not given that opportunity. So there are a number of issues that the panel or the judge made a determination on or made a call on, essentially stepping in as a fact finder when there are all these issues and dispute that at least raised an inference that this lady was not as qualified, and there were all these irregularities with the panel process. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve just a couple of minutes.
You may. Okay, thank you.
May it please the court. I think the principal issue in this case concerns the 2003 non-selection to the GS-14 safety manager position. And the core question there is whether, or pertains to, Mr. Hamilton's assertion that he was better qualified than the successful applicants. This court's case law makes clear that to advance such a claim, a plaintiff must show that they are significantly better qualified, that's the language from Adeyemi versus District of Columbia, or that there's a stark superiority or difference in qualifications. That's the language from Porter versus Shaw. Mr. Hamilton has not done that here. This process, essentially there were two steps. There was a ranking done of...
Why hasn't he met that standard? He had 19 years of experience as a safety officer. He had 19 years, and Ms. Burrell, just seven years in the 1990s, plus her six-month detail.
Your Honor, Mr. Hamilton,
he had degrees in just this field. She had none, he has all kinds of experience managing large safety programs at the Navy, a Navy-wide program, DOD-wide safety program. What does she have that's even comparable to that?
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Hamilton's experience is as an industrial hygienist, which is a technical-oriented position. The position at issue here is that of a safety manager, and essentially one of the key qualifications for the position, or one of the key duties, is being the spokesperson for the safety program, both within the agency, outside the agency, to Congress, and to the public at large. That's stated in the position description, which is in the joint appendix at 154, and that is how Mr. Burns, the selecting official, characterized one of the skill set they were looking for in terms of communication in his EEO affidavit at the joint appendix at 126.
I'm confused about that. The communications is the last of the qualifications listed, and it's at 155. The first is knowledge. Are you saying that this is just a spin position? You don't have to have knowledge about safety? It seems odd to have your safety manager's main job being communications with Congress. Well, I can understand that for the public relations office, but not for this office, particularly when the description of the major duties and the first skill set is knowledge, expert knowledge of an extensive experience in the theories, principles, practices, and advances pertaining to safety and occupational health disciplines and administration. Comprehensive knowledge of safety and occupational health related policy requirements and safety specialties. That's at JA 154.
Yeah, Your Honor, Ms. Burrell had 7 years experience up to the 1997 time period as a safety manager and as a regional safety officer, as well as approximately 1 year experience detailed to the very job in which she was competing for. She demonstrated in her application the very knowledge you set forth. And I would turn the court's attention.
The question isn't whether she doesn't have, I don't think there's any argument even by the other side that she's not qualified at all. The question is the disparity in the qualifications.
Well, eight years of experience satisfies the knowledge requirement, and in fact the ranking official rated her with the top score, also rated Ms. Carraway with the top score in terms of their application package. And I would turn the court's attention to the top portion of the joint appendix at 154, where the major duties are listed. And you'll see there that two of the major duties are clearly on spot in terms of communication, interacting with management, and then the fourth one, I believe, it discusses being a liaison with Congress, with the public, within the agency, with other agencies. So the selecting official found that Ms. Burrell, on balance, had the balance of qualifications, the experience, the knowledge, and the communication skills. And the factor level point scoring that you're looking at is an OPM mechanism by which the job is classified. And on each of the categories, the point scores are set by OPM. I think the court needs to look at what did the agency consider to be the major duties, which is reflected on the top of the position description. And again, the emphasis on communications is manifest
there.
Yeah,
the emphasis on communications is the fourth, even in the list of major duties. The first one is develops policies, procedures, and standards, performs extremely complex and significant functions in the development of decisions and policies, and provides technical guidance. That's the first major duty on page 154.
The second one, Your Honor, is advises top management, and the third one...
Advises doesn't sound like that doesn't sound like a communications job. I mean, hopefully the people giving advice are not just people who are good talkers.
Well, the fact is, Your Honor, that communication was a part of this job.
There's no doubt it was part. I'm only reacting to your suggestion that it was the principal part or the most significant part.
Well, I think what's clear is that they are not competing for a GS-14 industrial hygienist job. They are competing for a GS-14 safety manager job, a job that Ms. Burrell had served in for approximately a year and had previously had 7 years experience as in the safety manager and regional safety officer position, squarely the type of duties that were demanded by this job.
With respect to the detail, assuming we agree with you about the exhaustion and that it can't itself be a claim, can it not be something put to the jury as part of an overall plan? It seems to be the manner in which it's being argued here, that the plan was to groom her for this job so that she could get it and so that she would be able to have a list of qualifications, and that that was discriminatory. It was a way of preventing the plaintiff here from getting the job.
First, Your Honor, that's an issue or argument that was raised for the first time in the reply brief. Nevertheless, Mr. Burns is the alleged discriminating official here. Mr. Burns did not arrive at the IRS until April 2003. That you can find that in the joint appendix at 253. Ms. Burrell was placed in the detail in August of 2002. She had been in the detail for 8 months before Mr. Burns even arrived. There's no evidence in the record that Mr. Burns was involved in the renewal of the last component of that detail. And in fact, Ms. Burrell says that the renewal was done by a Mr. McFadden. That's in her testimony at 104 of the joint appendix, Mr. McFadden being an African-American male, same gender and race as Mr. Hamilton. So the notion of a pre-selection simply falls apart. They absolutely cannot connect the dots they're trying to connect here.
What about... I'm sorry.
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
What about plaintiff's argument that... the reason proffered by the agency here, namely that he didn't interview well, all comes from two of the three depositions, and that there's no reflection of that in the interview notes. And his point is that, you know, a jury looking at that could be suspicious about this reason, since A, it wasn't in the interview notes, and B, one of the pages of the notes, even though the IRS has an obligation to keep them, is gone.
Well, Your Honor, first, Mr. Hamilton submitted a declaration, a lengthy declaration to the district court. Nowhere in that declaration did he contend that he received any favorable feedback from the interview panel. The interview panel's testimony is undisputed in terms of his performance, their perception of his performance.
There's nothing in the interview notes.
Well, Your Honor, actually, the interview notes on page JA, the joint appendix at 159, to the extent there are observations about the applicant's performance, note for Mr. Hamilton that he, quote, restated questions before answering.
That might be a constructive thing to do to make sure he's answering the questions. Houston also says, quote, he thinks through answers.
Exactly. And
isn't that good?
Well, it's not.
Couldn't at least a jury conclude that they thought that that was a constructive reaction to Hamilton's interview?
In the context, it is not inconsistent with the testimony of Houston and the other panelist members that he did not respond effectively to the questions.
Houston, in his deposition, didn't say anything about this. It was the other two who did. And their comments about his lack of interview skills were awfully general. They couldn't give any specifics at all. My only question to you is, I mean, you know, you and I can, we can argue this, but isn't this really what juries are supposed to do?
Your Honor, there is no evidence that rebuts the testimony. And in this case,
no, that's right. But this is a subjective factor.
Yes,
not an objective factor.
And
our case law is pretty clear about being extremely skeptical about subjective considerations, and they're precisely the kinds of things that go to a jury. I mean, a jury. Just tell me, why couldn't a jury reasonably look at this? If you start with the fact that the jury might conclude, number one, that, you know, he is maybe not significantly more qualified, but better qualified because of experience. And when you combine that with the fact that, you know, the primary reason, the only reason the agency gives is not reflected in the interview notes, why couldn't a jury reasonably say, you know, what this looks like is, you know, this thing was wired for a white woman, and this argument about, or this justification about poor interviewing skills was cooked up after the lawsuit was filed.
Well, Your Honor, the
I'm just asking whether that isn't, how could a jury, why would that be an unreasonable conclusion for a jury to reach?
Well, the court's case law says that scrutiny, extra scrutiny is given to subjective reasons only if there's a significant disparity. Given that there's not a significant disparity, I would answer the court by saying a jury, just as this circuit does not do, would not have reason to question that subjective perception of the interview. And that's in Jackson versus Gonzalez. That's what the holding was.
In Holcomb, which reiterates ACCA, we also say the plaintiff may also argue that a lesser disparity combined with other flaws, namely this interview problem, is sufficient.
I don't see the interview as an irregularity. Interview is an appropriate method to make a hiring decision.
I didn't say irregularity. I said other flaws.
I'm not sure I understand what the court
Well, the point is that, yeah, maybe it doesn't all by itself rise to the ACCA standard. I'm not saying whether it does or not, but let's say it doesn't. But let's say a jury could think it's at least close, or as Holcomb says, doesn't meet the ACCA standard. It's a little less than that, but when you add to that the suspicion the jury might have about the proffered non-discriminatory reasons because it isn't reflected in the interview notes. Well, Holcomb seems to suggest that even if it doesn't rise to the ACCA standard, that would be sufficient.
I have two responses to that, Your Honor. First, I think that the situation of Ms. Carraway needs to be considered. Ms. Carraway was a safety manager, had industrial hygienist experience, had, according to her, she was certified for 12 years, 20 years experience in the safety, occupational health and safety field, and the interview panel had the same reaction to her relative to Mr. Hamilton. The interview notes note good examples given by, actually affirmatively, good examples given by Ms. Carraway. Good answer is language used to describe an answer by Ms. Burrell.
Ms. Carraway, black or white?
She's a white female. But I think the context here needs to be considered. Mr. Hamilton it's not that he was the second choice. He was either the third or fourth choice behind Burrell and Carraway. So to suggest that there's something suspect about the interview panel's reaction to Burrell under some notion that there might be a slight disparity in qualifications doesn't answer the question, well, what about Carraway, who had the hygienist experience and had the safety manager experience? I would also say I think the distinctions they're drawing in experience is really the type of fine distinctions in Stewart versus Ashcroft that the court found not to give rise to an inference.
Am I correct in recalling that the district court relied, or at least recounted, I think relied on not only that 1 year that Burrell had in the job, but some 3 years at an earlier period in her service. Is that correct?
That's correct. What I'd like to answer that is yes. First, to answer an earlier question before I came on, Ms. Burrell did receive an outstanding rating for the period in which she was in that detail. That is at the Joint Appendix at 227, and there was 7 years prior experience, I believe, in the record, and I know the district court relied on a portion of that. That was from, I believe, the roughly 90 to 97 time period, 4 years as a regional safety officer, 3 years as an occupational health manager at the GS-12 level from 94 to 97, and you can find those references at the Joint Appendix 219 and 222.
I
would just ask then that the urge that the court affirm the judgment.
We got
below.
That part of your argument.
You thought you were going there anyway.
Yeah. I think he had all this time. How much time did he have?
He had 2 minutes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Your Honor, the district court, in issuing his decision, essentially said that he thought that this was a close call when you looked at the all the factors raised in the non-selection.
A little more qualified than that, right? It was if you look at them, it's, in the best light, it's a closed call.
Yes.
Most favorable to your client, it would be a closed call.
Well.
Which is not how he viewed the matter, but saying, looking at it that way.
Well, Your Honor, and that's where we believe the district, we believe one of the areas where the district court erred. It's clear that, you know, there's a substantial, well, I don't,
Mr. Branch,
we're not going to say substantial difference, but there's a significant difference in the qualifications.
Could you respond to opposing counsel's argument that she had 7 years of prior experience between 1990 and 1997?
I'm not sure of that. I can't respond particularly to that. I know that based on what I've seen in the record, there was a period of time where she was a space doing logistics or space planning, and I believe that was the period between 1992. I know that she served for a period of, I think, 3 years as a safety manager in the 1992 period. And then she had an extensive period where she did space planning.
Well, that's where your brief refers to collecting the keys and that kind of thing.
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're saying that out of that 1990 to 1997 period, only 3 years were actually related to?
Yes. Safety management type work, yes.
Mm-hmm. And what was your answer to opposing counsel's argument that, with respect to this detail, that Burns didn't even arrive on the scene until after the detail had already been established?
Yes, it's true that Burns came into the agency, I think it was in April of 2003. So
what's the nature of your argument that was sort of a setup for I took that to be your argument, that this was part of a setup to ensure that she got the job over your client.
Well,
how could that be if the person who's alleged to be discriminatory is
The appellant's position is that the agency has a pattern of providing preferential treatment to Caucasian women. And for example, with this detail that was given to Burrell, followed by the selection of Burrell, followed by the detail given to Caraway. And it's not just Mr. Burns, but his position is that it's the agency in that office provided preferential treatment to Caucasian women.
Opposing counsel said that the person who, I guess, continued the detail was a Mr. McFadden, who was a black male.
I don't have a response to that. I believe that to be the case. I don't have anything to dispute that, at least.
Okay.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.